Hopefully you had a chance to look at the questions I sent out a few days ago to help guide our study in the character study of Joshua and Caleb this evening. And obviously I have a special interest in this one, as our sons are named after these two Bible characters. Great men of faith, great men of strength and courage. Before we start, I do want to bring to your attention that Amber this tomorrow is going to be driving down to South Carolina to help her dad and her sister move her mom into a memory care facility. And I know that's been weighing on her mind for quite some time, all of our minds. And I know that their family would really appreciate your prayers. That's a difficult thing to do. Those of you who have gone through that, please keep them in your prayers. All right. You get one chance in their life to do this. So I took a chance. My Joshua and Caleb. Sorry, I just had to. All right. Into the real study. So we had some readings that I pointed out that I'd like us to look at for studying these two Bible characters, Joshua and Caleb. I think there's some tremendous lessons that we can gain from studying these stories. And as we go through, I want us to consider a little bit of background for each of them. For Joshua, we first see Joshua mentioned in the Bible in Exodus, the 17th chapter. If you would just go ahead and turn over to that chapter of the Bible, Exodus chapter 17. Here we see that then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. This is verse 8. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose men for us to go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I would take my stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." And Joshua did as Moses told him, to fight against Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So this is the first time we're introduced to Joshua, is in this battle, and Moses giving him instruction to go fight against Amalek. Furthermore, over in Exodus chapter 24, as Moses is coming down from the mountain with the law, and we see the sin of the people, and we see some interaction here with Moses and Joshua. Exodus chapter 24, verse 13, so Moses arose with Joshua his attendant, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. So here we see Joshua mentioned as an attendant of Moses, as kind of Moses' right-hand man. And again, over in Exodus chapter 33. And I have here verse 11, when we see that Yahweh used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend. And then Moses would return to the camp. And notice here that his attendant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. So again, Joshua mentioned as being kind of, again, Moses' right-hand man through a lot of this. It's also interesting to note that Joshua is from the tribe of Ephraim. Okay, and if you've been doing your Bible readings today, we saw a lot of mention about Ephraim, didn't we? And that should really hit home for us. Because what we read about Ephraim today, in particular, I don't want to get too much into Clayton's, what I'm sure is going to be a very good study on Sunday, but to think, what would Joshua think about what Hosea writes about Ephraim? What would he think about his own tribe? How sad would that make him? You know, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, is what's written there in Hosea. Just something to think about. Joshua's name means salvation. Again, he was an attendant to Moses. He was kind of Moses' right-hand man. There's some age things that we don't really know about Joshua, other than that he was mentioned as a young man in Exodus and that he lived to 110 years old. There's some assumptions that he and Caleb were around the same age. I'm not sure that we can draw that definitively, but it's possible that they were at least relatively close in age, maybe. And it's also important to note that Israel was faithful under the leadership of Joshua. I think that's something that we should take away from our readings there, that, and we'll look at this a little bit later, that the people of Israel had peace after they conquered the land. And that was a lot of that's due to the leadership that Joshua showed. Caleb is first mentioned in Numbers chapter 13, and we're going to get into that a little bit here in a second, in a few minutes, the story of the spies going in to check out the land of Canaan. Caleb is from the tribe of Judah. He's very confident in God's ability to save and lead the people and lead them to victory. He was 40 years old when they spied the land, and one of the things that's really important that we'll look at later as well is that when he defeats Anak, he is 85 years old. So at 85 years old, he's still battling. And it talks about how he still has his strength at that age. And he still has this vigor to do the work of God. That's important for us to notice. All right. So question one. Let's start us off. Describe, just give us a little summary or what point jumped out to you as far as the actions of Joshua and Caleb in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. What are some of the things that we should notice from those chapters?
Told the children of Israel exactly the same thing about the land that all the spies did. They said, the land is wonderful, it's flowing with milk and honey, and these people are strong. They're big and they're strong. And up till that, they agreed with the other 10. It's when the other 10 said, and so we can't do it. And Joshua and Caleb said, but God can do it.
Vance? Good. Any other details? We should notice. Weren't scared. Okay. Excellent. So, Tony, go ahead.
Over in chapter 14, starting in verse 6, not just their fleet, but tearing their clothes and everything, and it's like they can see just, okay, what's happening, where the people are going. I think it's just the emotional passion and everything they have. Think about what you're saying and everything here. And then if the Lord is a light to the field, we'll be okay. But if he doesn't, and everything, so they're doing everything they can to steer the people back and everything.
Yeah. I have here that, you know, Joshua and Caleb faced extreme peer pressure. I mean, this is what we would call extreme peer pressure regarding the report of the land. And it jumped out to me that the entire congregation, all of Israel, weeps all night. I mean, they're just devastated by this, the bad report of, we thought we had this land, and here we are, we're just facing certain death, is how Israel viewed the situation. So much so that they just wept and cried all night. And the people complained against Moses and Aaron. Why did you bring us up here just to die? And also that they're ready to appoint a new leader and what? Yeah, go back to Egypt and one step further, what were they going to do with Caleb and Joshua? Joshua and Caleb. Stone them. Throw stones at them. Put them to death. Appoint a new leader. Let's go back to Egypt. When we put all that in context of how much courage, how much strength that takes, I mean, when Moses says, be strong and courageous. When God tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. When Joshua says, be strong and courageous. Those aren't just words. There's action that is accompanying these commands to be strong and courageous in the Lord. How about this one? How difficult is it to stand against the crowd? I mean, this is an extreme case, right? This is an extreme case that we're seeing here. But you know, one of the points I want to make here is that, you know, to our middle school and high school and college age, young professional age students, I put 13 to wherever age you want to put on that. You're in the midst of one of the hardest, most extreme peer pressure times of your entire life. I think most of us who have gone through this, we can acknowledge that. And just, it's important to know that the skills and habits that you're using to answer peer pressure, it's going to matter. It's going to stick. It's going to become a habit for you later. It's going to mold and shape who you are as an adult. You know, one of the things that we try to tell our kids is, like, try to see your future self, your 30-year-old self, your 35 or 40-year-old self, and what they would think about the choices that you're making now. And not that everything has, you know, is going to be perfect, but it just gives you a long-term perspective of what type of adult you're shaping into. But also that peer pressure is always going to be a temptation in your life. Even if you're at a younger age or you're middle age or you're older, it's always a temptation. It's just going to take different shapes. It's going to take different forms, but it's always going to be there. So right now, especially if you're young, be aware of the answers that you're giving, the choices that you're making, how you're allowing yourself to go along with the crowd. That is, you could be developing some habits and skills that are very hard to break as you get into your adult self. And what would your adult self think of the choices you're making? Yeah, that habits and skills will shape our future decisions. Anyone else want to chime in on this? I don't believe for one second that this was the first time that Joshua and Caleb faced peer pressure. I don't believe that for one second. That this was the first time they had to stand for truth or what was right. This is an extreme account that we get to read about, and we see how much strength and courage they did have in a very big moment in time. But I'm very confident that those skills and habits were built over years. I mean, as we saw, Joshua was an attendant of Moses, and I feel very sure in saying that he probably had some practice. Not that he always got it right. Yes,
but it's not about skills, really, when it comes to it's making the choices that you're making. It's putting your trust where it needs to be. If you do that, then skills don't matter. I mean, I know he's going to win. I want to be on the winning side. I'm going to do that. That's the bottom line, and that's what they did, and that's all they did. They didn't have to, you know. It's not a trick to it. It's just a matter of trusting God.
Yeah, and maybe habits is the better word that I should use there, of just as you face those, you're getting in a habit of having faith. Danny?
The verses that really highlight.
So part three of the question one was how can we make sure that we're ready to face similar situations? What should we do? What are some of the things that we should do? Or that we can do, Joshua? Yeah, knowing who's first, who to put first. Anything else that we can do to help us? Yeah, Clayton. There we go. Here's a list I came up with. We have to love God with all our heart and put Him first. That's the first and foremost thing. We have to love God and put Him first. He has to be first. We have to put our trust in Him. I believe that's what Caleb and Joshua did. Joshua and Caleb did. They put God first. See that in Matthew? We see Jesus say that in Matthew 23, 37-38. We have to abide in the Word. We've been talking about that a lot this year. We have to know the truth, abiding in the Word, reading the Word. That's going to help us when we face similar situations. And we have to. That's going to help us always be ready to give an answer. You know, instead of being silent or giving the wrong answer, we'll know the right answer if we're abiding in the Word. Again, Hosea, we read that today. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge. That's sobering to read. Okay? Be in the Word and be ready to give an answer and then encourage each other. That's what we see from Hebrews chapter 10, is that, you know, our gathering together, our assembling together, all of us here together studying the Word, abiding in the Word, like-minded. We're iron sharpens iron. We're here helping each other, encouraging each other. Yeah, please, Linda. Yeah. To your entry. Excellent. I will add that to the list. That's a good one. And we saw that from David so many times, him praying to God for guidance. How does God describe Caleb? Danny touched on this just a little bit. What does God say about Caleb after the people reject the spies or reject Joshua and Caleb's report about, you know, take the land, and they accept the bad report from the other 10? How does God describe Caleb, and how can we have these same characteristics? What do we see in Numbers 14? In what verse? Mm-hmm. Yep, verse 24. My servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit, and followed me fully. And he's followed me fully. And so notice how he continues there too. I will bring into the land which he entered. I'm going to bring him into the land, and his seed will take possession of it. He says four things about, I guess really three if you combine the last two. But he has a different spirit. He's followed me fully, and he's going to possess the land. He's going to be one of the ones who goes in and takes possession of this land. How can we have these same characteristics? How can we have a different spirit? What do you think about when you hear that? Wade.
And that's where, you know, in the verses that precede that, you say, none of them who have seen my glory and my signs that I have used and yet put me to the test, they did not obey my voice. But Caleb and Joshua too, right? Mm-hmm. They saw the same thing that the other Israelites did, and this is him. So they didn't forget how God had delivered them over and over from Egypt and the wilderness. So if the other 10 spies come back and they're thinking of themselves, we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers compared to them. So they're thinking of their own strength, saying, I'm not capable of doing this. Whereas Joshua and Caleb are thinking of their own personal strength. Yeah, they're like grasshoppers too. But their view is that God is going to do this. So for us to have that same faith,
recognize whatever our personal limitations are, God, maybe like a grasshopper, that God is something that made him his ability to do good things, rooting that people glorify, trusting him. Good. So again, how God describes Caleb, we have it here from Numbers 14:24. How can we have these same characteristics? What I have here is that we can have a different spirit. I believe, as it's described here, by loving God and putting Him first in our lives. What we're going to see in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 6. By putting God first, loving Him with all our heart, soul, and mind, that's where that different spirit starts. Again, following God with all our hearts, Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 7. This new heart that he talks about in Deuteronomy, putting this new heart. Focus on eternal and spiritual things instead of physical things. We've mentioned already. The other 10 were focused so much on the physical dominance and stature of the people of Canaan, right? They were focused on the physical instead of on the eternal God who's greater. Yes, Joshua. We're talking about Joshua again. Joshua, not Joshua. Yeah, please. And I have here, last is finish the race. I mean, they're at the threshold of the promised land. Finish the race. Go into the promised land. And I know, you know, in 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8, Paul there is talking about the ultimate promised land, the final rest. But it applies to this story. They were right there. Just finish the race and get there. And instead, they were ready to turn back and go back to the starting line. That doesn't make any sense to me. Caleb? What does God tell Joshua when he's commissioned as the leader of the people? What does Joshua tell his officers? And then what lessons can be learned for leaders today? And I'm not really necessarily referencing secular leaders here. I'm talking about like leaders in the church. What can we learn from these? From here, what does God tell Joshua when he's commissioned as the leader of the people? Where do we see all that? Okay. Yeah, so let's turn over to Joshua chapter 1. And Tony, could you reference which verse and what's instructed there? Yeah, how many times does he say be strong and very courageous? 3, right? I mean, he's repeating it quite a bit. How about what does Joshua tell his officers? What instructions does he give there? Actually, let's finish off this first one first. Don't get ahead of myself too much. All right, so what does he tell what does God tell Joshua? He tells him be strong and courageous. Do not be dismayed. Do not be discouraged. Do not dread. And he promises them here, you will cause the people to inherit the promised land. You're going to lead them into the promised land. But be careful to do all according to all the law, and don't turn aside from it. So again, very similar language what we saw throughout Deuteronomy, what Moses instructs there as well. And then keep the law in your mouth. Meditate on it day and night. He also gives that instruction. And then I am with you wherever you go. So some very strong words of encouragement that God gives Joshua here as he's about to go into the promised land and lead the people into the promised land. As far as Joshua's instructions to his officers, anybody have any things they wrote down for that or they noticed? And where do we see that? Tells the officers, tell the people to prepare themselves. So he's kind of filtering down this instruction. So what I want us to see here is that he's reminding the officers, Yahweh is going to give us the land. Yahweh will give us rest. And then he has this focus on this unified brotherhood. You know, like everybody's going to go in, everybody's going to fight, we're going to conquer the land, and then we're going to give out the land. We see that in verses 14 and 15, specifically with some of the tribes who are going to get different pieces. And then we see the officers give an endorsement to Joshua. They're at the end of chapter 1. After these instructions that he gives them, they submit to him, they encourage him, and they encourage him to be strong and courageous. So he's getting it from, you know, we might call that up the chain and down the chain. He's getting this encouragement to be strong and courageous from the people he's leading and the one who's leading him. So a great time as they go in to fight these battles. Great words for Joshua. How about what lessons can we learn? What can be learned as far as leadership today, and specifically like spiritual leadership, church leadership, leadership among the brethren? Anybody write anything down for that? How about who should we submit to first? Who leads the leaders? The chief shepherd, right? So submit ourselves to God first. If you're wanting to be a leader, or you consider yourself to be a leader, or you want to lead others, you have to submit yourself to the one first, to the one true shepherd. Know the source of true strength and courage. It's not, as Steve pointed out rightly, it's not in our own ability. It's not in our skills, right? It's not in our skills. The strength and courage comes from our faith in the power of God, from the one true God. That's where true strength and courage comes from. And then focus on service, that brotherhood that Joshua focused on, the teamwork, and encouraging one another. That should be our focus as well. And then also, I think it's also important that we notice here that Joshua communicates and exemplifies what his higher purpose is. He's clear in communicating. We're going to see this in further questions. He's very clear about who gets the credit for conquering the land. Who is actually in charge? Who is the source of strength and courage? He's very clear about that. He communicates that down to his leaders, to the people, and he exemplifies that in his actions as well. He's not talking the talk. He is walking the walk as he goes through this conquering of the land and leading the people. Yeah. Question 4, who meets with Joshua before the Battle of Jericho? So Joshua's gotten this strength and courage message from God. His leaders they're backing him. They're there with him. They're also strengthening and encouraging him to have strength and courage. Who meets with Joshua before they go into that first battle in Jericho? Where do we see this? What book, chapter, verse? Chapter 5, verse 13, who meets with him? The commander of the Lord's army. So, commander of the host of Yahweh. And I put in here parentheses. This is me. I believe this is Jesus. Okay. I've gone back and forth with this. I know that we're not told this is Jesus in this passage. But I think regardless of whether you believe this is the word or not, revealing himself to Joshua as he goes in to fight the Battle of Jericho, it's a wonderful, wonderful story that we read of God strengthening Joshua with this interaction that he has. That here's the commander of the Lord's army, and I'm with you. I'm fighting your battles for you. As we sang earlier, the battle belongs to the Lord. It's just such a powerful story that we read here. The reason I believe this is Jesus, I think we have a couple other things. I put some verses up here. Take a look at them and see where they lead you. All right? Anybody else have anything on who met with Joshua here at the Battle of Jericho? Yeah, Tony, go ahead. No.
In verse 15, the commander of the Lord's army says to Joshua, "Take your sandals off and you need to put these sandals on." And to me, it's like, if you read those words, my mind goes back to the word.
Sure does.
And so you have the same type of thing happening as the angel of the Lord, but the way we read it, there's the Lord's army. Preparing him for this job, for this mission. Kind of the same thing, but it's not getting into the thing, but that encouragement for the job that they have to do, and leave no doubt that he was going to be a fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Chad, question 5. What is significant about the land that Caleb requests from Joshua? And where do we see this request? This was part of the readings that I sent out in advance. What land does Caleb request or specify that he'd like to go possess from Joshua? Where is that found, and what's significant about that? There's a significant piece of the story here. Anybody? So what chapter do we see this in? Was that Joshua 14? Okay, so in Joshua chapter 14, starting around verse 12 is where we see this request. But let's back up just a little bit. And let's go... Verse 10. So now behold, Yahweh has let me live. This is Caleb talking to Joshua. So now behold, Yahweh has let me live just as he spoke these 45 years from the time that Yahweh spoke this word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. So now behold, I am 85 years old today. This is Caleb at 85 years old saying this. I'm still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me to spy out the land. As my strength was then, so my strength is now for war and for going out and coming in. So now, give me this hill country about which Yahweh spoke on that day, for you heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps Yahweh will be with me, and I will dispossess them as Yahweh has spoken. What? Who are the the people of Anakim that he's asking to go dispossess? These are those giants. 45 years later, 85 years old. So he says that at 40, he's feeling pretty good, right? 40, yeah, okay, I felt a little better at 40 than I do today. But at 85 years old, he's saying this. I'm ready. The giants that we saw, that scared us so bad, that's the land I want. With those huge grapes, those clusters and everything that we saw, that's the land I want. I want that hill country. And you know, maybe Yahweh will be with me. I'll take that land. That just stands out to me so much that 45 years later, at the young age of 85, Caleb is still ready to go in. He still has faith that God's going to be with him. He has that strength and courage. Let's go get those giants. And we're not talking about New York Giants there. No, you hated that dad joke. I saw that smirk, Caleb. Anything else about this? Okay. Yeah, let that wash over you. What do we learn in Joshua chapters 11 and 21? And how does this give us confidence in our faith? What do we learn in Joshua chapter 11 and Joshua chapter 21? Also 23. Yeah, very good. Anything else? Yeah, very good. So from what Keith pointed out in chapter 21 and what Glenn has mentioned also, when you combine chapter 11, is that they conquered the entire land. And most importantly, that there was what after they finished their battles? Rest. Peace. There was peace on every side from them. They had accomplished what God had asked them to accomplish. And how does this give us confidence in our faith? Absolutely. So we see here, again, Joshua conquered the entire land. We see that in chapter 11, chapter 21, chapter 23, verse 1. And there was quiet or rest and peace after these battles. They had peace. Joshua chapter 21, verse 44. Rest on every side is what it says there. How does this give us confidence in our faith? In our faith, that, as Steve said, God keeps His promises. That's the confidence that we can have today. And in fact, there is a rest for us as children of God. This is directly referenced in Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, Joshua giving the people rest, but that there was another rest that's being referenced, that David referenced in Psalm 95, verse 7, that there is a rest for the people of God, and that's our goal, is to enter that rest, that heavenly home, that heavenly purpose, to finish that race as we're standing on the edge and on the threshold of eternity in the promised land, our eternal home. Finish. Have strength, have courage in God, keep our trust, keep our faith, keep our confidence in the one true God, knowing that as He fought the battles for Joshua and the people, He's also fighting spiritual battles for us today to make sure that we enter that rest. Who does Joshua credit for the conquer of the land? And what instruction does Joshua give the people in his final days as the leader of Israel? First of all, who does Joshua credit for the conquer of the land? The Lord. Where do we see that? Yeah, there's a couple places we could probably point to. You said 22, verse 4, could you read that for us, please? Okay. Anywhere else? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've got a couple here. In Joshua chapter 23, verse 3, he says, "You've seen all that Yahweh has done to all these nations because of you." And so specifically, what God has done, not that we've done, not that I've done, what God has done for us. Yahweh has dispossessed great and mighty nations from before you. He makes that in 23:9. And then, "For Yahweh your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised." Again, for keeping his promises. What instruction does Joshua give the people? He reminds them at the end of Joshua there, if you turn from Yahweh to other gods, what's going to happen to you? His anger is going to burn against you. He gives them that same reminder that Moses gave in Deuteronomy. If you turn from him and you don't put him first and you follow after other gods, his anger is going to burn. It's not going to be good for you. And again, as we're reading right now, this week, Joshua's tribe of Ephraim and what's said about them there in Hosea, they didn't listen. And we know it was quick. It was quickly after that. Judges chapter 2, by that point, that there arose a generation to pass Joshua that did not know the Lord their God. They did what was right in their own eyes. They had forgotten all of these battles. In just two generations, how quickly that happened. Two generations they conquered. They went from conquering giants and dispossessing all the people of the land of Canaan and having all these good and wonderful things, peace all around them. Two generations is all it took to forget. I mean, that is very, very, very sobering. He also tells them, choose this day who you're going to serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That is a powerful statement that he makes there. And so just in conclusion with the last minute or so that we have, just some takeaways that I had from this study. We have to love God with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind. That's what he asks. That's what it's going to take for us to put our full trust in him. And we have to abide in the word. Destroyed for lack of knowledge. Let that wash over you again and again from the reading today. Be strong and courageous. But where is the true strength and courage going to come from? It's going to come from God, by trust in God. We have to trust in the Lord. And then ultimately, give Him the glory when we do see success or when we see failures. The glory is God's, in good times or in bad times. And as we keep those things in foremost in front of us, then we too can be ready if when we face these extreme peer pressure like Joshua and Caleb faced in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. So thank you all so much for the discussion. This has been a lot of fun. When the list came out that I was teaching Joshua and Caleb, I definitely gave a little smirk to Wade and accepted with great ambition. So hopefully I didn't embarrass my kids too much with the